It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. Over a century ago, Wisconsin became the first state to provide compensation for people who served prison sentences for crimes it turned out they hadn't committed. At the time, the maximum award was $5,000. That'd be roughly $160,000 in today's money. Wisconsin's wrongful conviction compensation has been updated once in 1979. According to a new data analysis, Wisconsin has gone from being at the forefront of this issue to having the second lowest compensation rate nationwide. Kushbu Rathore is a fellow at Wisconsin Watch and ran the numbers. She talked to Kate Archer-Kent last week.
Not every state has wrongful conviction compensation. Lay it out for us. What is this money and when is it dispersed?
Yeah, so the federal standard is that people who were put in federal jail, at least, and were later found to be innocent or exonerated, according to the federal government, they're entitled to some amount of compensation for each year they spent in prison. And so the federal standard is $50,000 per year. In Wisconsin, the standard is $5,000 per year up to a maximum of $25,000, which I found absolutely mind-boggling when I first heard about it. You know, the maximum Wisconsin allows is half of the federal standard for a single year. And then you have people who are in prison for decades who are not getting really any support when they're released and they were innocent.
How do we compare to other states, though?
Really, really terribly. The only state that's worse than us overall is Montana, and that's because Montana only provides education assistance, so they don't provide any monetary compensation. Of the states that provide monetary compensation, we are by far the worst. We provide $4,200 per year loss to exonerees. And this is just the exonerees who were paid. And there are many who either don't apply or don't get any payout.
What is the role then of the Wisconsin Claims Board that can recommend additional compensation? When do they step in?
All the claims will go through them, and they, in the letters that they have that show the results of the claim, they'll show, here's what the exoneree said, and then the district attorney office in that county will usually have their own little piece. Sometimes the district attorney will say nothing. They'll be like, it's up to the claims board to decide. Otherwise, sometimes they'll say, yeah, we don't think this person is innocent, or, you know, their evidence isn't clear and convincing. And so the claims board gets to decide on their criteria, which is the evidence clear and convincing that this person was put in jail incorrectly and that they are innocent? So there's this huge distinction there of you can be exonerated because of a vacated judgment or because of, you know, legal issues when it came to your trial, like your attorney was incompetent, or in one case, there was someone who was chained down during his trial, and the jury could see that, and a federal judge later said, you know, we need to vacate his judgment because of that. But the claims board said, you know, just because that happened doesn't mean you were innocent, and you can't prove your innocence, even though you have messages from the people who you say committed the crime, saying that they committed the crime and you weren't involved. Like, that's not enough evidence, so you don't get any payout.
It sounds like the Wisconsin Claims Board wields sweeping a lot of power.
They do. They basically have all the power in the situation. And in some cases, they do recommend, you know, if a person has been in jail for an extremely long time, they can recommend that the legislature provide extra money. So in some cases, people have gotten over $1 million and over that $25,000 limit.
Does this compensation or this cash payout include anything other than money?
It does not. They can apply separately in the same document, but as a separate category for attorney's fees. But other than that, a lot of other states will provide things like help with health care for the first few years, help with reintegrating into society, help with higher education, housing. Wisconsin provides none of that.
Can you open your reporter's notebook for us? What tipped you off on this story? Where did you begin with the data?
I just landed on the Wisconsin Claims Board website somehow, and I saw that they had a separate listing for innocent conviction compensations. And I started looking at that, and it was not in any kind of data set. It was just every single document that included one of those. And you kind of had to scroll through all the legalese to find the actual information about how much was requested, how much was given, why it was denied. And so I decided to take that information, and I kind of realized, okay, well, the claims board data is only really going to show people who did apply. So I started looking for other sources for people who have been exonerated, and I found the University of Michigan Law School's National Registry of Exonerations. And so I decided to kind of filter down to just 2005 onwards, kind of get a 20-year look at it. And I also found another source called For Justice. I compiled those three into my own kind of database. And then I also used a data set that the National Registry of Exonerations kind of compiled about each of the states and how they stack up to each other.
And along the way, did you figure out how often Wisconsin is denying compensation for years spent in prison?
I did. So it was more than half, but a lot of those people didn't receive the full amount they asked for. They may have received very minor amounts or really like just attorney's fees in some cases.
Is there any state legislation in the works or any efforts by lawmakers to change the system?
So there were, and that's kind of what continued to make me want to push through the story is seeing, okay, so there were attempts in, I believe it was 2016 and 2017 to create legislation that would raise the ceiling for innocent conviction compensation. And it made it through the assembly with no problem, but then it stopped at the Senate. They just never pushed it onto the floor. And I talked to State Senator LaTanya Johnson from Milwaukee, and she mentioned, you know, there's just kind of no appetite for the bill. They don't think that it would pass right now. And we both kind of agreed, you know, it's a really common sense bill. You know, people who are getting out of jail after being exonerated shouldn't have to just go out into the world and it'd be like, we took your entire life away, but here's $25,000. But there's not a lot that the legislature wants to do about it.
Khushbu, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Khushbu Rathore is the Roy W. Howard Fellow with the nonpartisan investigative newsroom Wisconsin Watch. She recently published a data analysis of how Wisconsin compensates people who are wrongfully convicted. As we look more closely at the impact of wrongful conviction compensation, we turn to Jarrett Adams. In 2000, a Wisconsin court wrongfully convicted and sentenced Adams 28 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. Adams is an attorney and exoneree specializing in criminal defense, civil rights, and wrongful conviction cases in state and federal courts. His memoir is called Redeeming Justice. Jarrett, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
You were denied compensation in 2009, 2 years after being released from prison. The Wisconsin Claims Board said in your case it lacked clear and convincing evidence. Can you recount that story?
Yes. 17 years old. I am born and raised in the state of Illinois. I go to a party in Wisconsin. You know, falsely accused of a sexual assault. Wrongfully convicted based on police withholding evidence from a witness that would have exonerated me. I ended up getting the Wisconsin Innocence Project to take on my appeal. We appealed. The court unanimously overturned my conviction based on my attorney failing to investigate, and not what I previously mentioned, not the fact that the police never turned it over, which was a statement from a witness that, you know, assisted in my exoneration. So the conviction's reversed. I come home, but the damage is not reversed. I get out and I'm staying with my mom and my stepfather, and I'm not out until I'm 26, turning 27 years old. So the impact of what was taken from me was definitely felt, but I started to look up after that decision. That decision compelled me to be where I am today. I took that decision to mean more than just I couldn't by clear and convincing evidence, because I started to go back and read all of the other cases as well that were denied. And it was pretty much, if you didn't have DNA clearing you, or you didn't have someone else, you know, standing up and saying, I did it, you know, or the actual accuser saying you didn't do it, they would deny all of them. I mean, even though evidence would be overwhelming in innocence. So to me, when they deny me, I didn't just take that as a denial and, you know, it's just, you know, how they felt. I took that as another direct attack to take more of my life from me by watching me fail.
When you're ultimately freed from prison, what is your situation like? Where did you find stability and income?
So I ended up, I started with my mom's and my stepfather's network of people, literally cleaning gutters. If it was wintertime, shoveling snow. This is when TVs were being hung on walls. So I would go around and hang people's. I did whatever I needed to do during the day so that I can get through school at night. You know, I can remember this even more vividly. It wasn't just when they denied me. They denied me. And then afterwards, one of the board members told me, I'm sorry this happened to you. Good luck in life. Mm. And that was almost like, that was like more of a slap in the face to me, where you had the opportunity to assist. That $25,000 would have helped me, would have cured all the things that I experienced. No, I wouldn't have, but it would have helped me get planning, you know, back on my feet and start to do something. So I took that again as they wanted to see me further fail. So I'm working during the day, I'm going to school at night. And my mom and my aunts were both professionals. My aunt, she believed in therapy. And so she told me that I needed to take therapy. So I was on my own. But thankfully, I have my father, and I have something that most people who go through this don't have. And that's still their youth ahead of them.
Compensation, as we talk about the standard amount, maximum $5,000 a year, capped at $25,000. I mean, Wisconsin was a pioneer, 1913, leading the country in wrongful conviction compensation. What has happened to these efforts? What are your insights?
The petitioner has changed. So back in 1913, when this happened, the petitioner was not, you know, majority of people of color, like it is now. And that's a derivative of the entire justice system and how disproportionately people of color are convicted more than their counterparts in the state of Wisconsin. And so we've found ourselves making it easily digestible to ignore the problem when a problem doesn't make it on the majority's doorsteps. And so if we can acknowledge that back in 1913, that there was some need to help correct and put people back on their feet, let's just look at the cost of living. If you do the calculations, then that's no way in the world that number shouldn't be somewhere around $50,000 to $75,000 to $100,000 a year. It's just right.
You are representing brothers, David and Robert Vince of Green Bay. They're seeking $2 million each from the state for their 24 years spent in prison for a murder they didn't commit. What about $2 million? What do you think justifies that compensation?
The staff that I have in Wisconsin, everybody took turns like going through and making best arguments and looking at cases that were decided over the statute before. And we could find none that hit all of the hallmarks as this one. This, if this is granted, this would be the highest they've ever went over in $2 million. And here's our argument why. There was a case in which the legislators granted $1 million over the statute. And that was to someone who came home in at the end of their 30s, about to approach 40. They still had opportunity to work until the years of retirement start to approach around 50, 55. In this case, Robert and David are home at 70 years old. There's nothing they can do right now besides have their hands out and beg the community to push the legislators and everyone else to fix this situation for them. But they're also concerned about others who come out at the same age as they are.
What should be the model here? What would you direct the state of Wisconsin to do? Are there other states that are making inroads?
There are. Shockingly, to probably some in the criminal justice community, Texas is really like leading the charge in what they do. They give mental health care support. They give health care support. And they also give, you know, little pots of money and resources to help with both like finding a place to stay. Like, we're having the biggest problem with David and where he stays and where he's, you know, able to stay. So is with Bobby, who's sickly a bit. You know, it's hard to find places that will accept their $600-$700 a year, you know, benefits money that they're able to get. And so in this situation, I think that there's an opportunity for us to endanger both the people we're releasing as well as the communities they're being released back into if we don't help. If there wasn't people like the Wisconsin Innocence Project, like the Great Northern Innocence Project, to assist after they were able to get people out, then there will be nothing. As well as the organization Life After Justice, you know, is an organization I created to help with the mental health care aspect of it, where we are training therapists specifically to treat men like Bobby and David. Hmm. So they're getting help, but the help that they're getting is pieced together like a puzzle, and it's just not fair or right for tax-paying citizens as David and Bobby were before they were wrongfully convicted.
I want to circle back to what you experienced, and it really sounds like your family stepped in and provided that help and support when you really needed it. And with your organization, Life After Justice, helping people rebuild their lives after being exonerated, how do you see the role of nonprofits helping make up for what the state isn't providing?
I think specifically for my organization, and again, the organization, you know, I found an organization in the spirit of my aunt that I told you about, who helped me get into therapy. I was in a breakneck pace to get my law degree because I wanted my mom and my aunt to be proud of me and know that they supported me for years, that weren't just for nothing. So I made this organization in her name because she saw something that I didn't really see right away. And she told me, she said, look, you know, when your life is a marathon and when someone like you gets out like that, the first thing you need to do is not start running a race. It's tying your shoes. So mental health care to her was tying your shoes. There's no way that anyone can look and see what happens to men and women like Bobby and not think that they would have some type of mental impact from it. So in creating an organization, we are collecting data, and we are using the data to argue to legislators to do what is right. We understand that we're not big enough. We don't get enough donations and have enough therapists on deck to help provide therapy to all those who are wrongfully convicted. But hopefully, as we collect the data, we serve as an example to influence and argue to the legislators, look, this needs to happen. This can save lives and it can protect communities. And that's what you swore to constituents that you would do.
Jarrett, thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope you have me again.
Jarrett Adams is an exoneree and attorney whose cases involve criminal defense, civil rights, and wrongful conviction in state and federal courts. His memoir is called Redeeming Justice. We earlier heard from Kushbu Rathore from Wisconsin Watch. They both talked to Kate Archer-Kent about the impact of state compensation for people who are wrongfully convicted. Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, preview a new documentary that tells the story of women who work as exotic dancers at a club in rural northern Wisconsin.
Yes, it can be uncomfortable at times, but, you know, a lot of the issues that are dealt with are issues that any of us can go through.
That's next here on WPR News.